From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Gorlot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma, and welcome to Worldviews. Joshua Landis and I discuss Tuesday night's State of the Union address.
And tonight I call on this Congress to show the world that we are united in this mission by passing a resolution to authorize the use of force against ISIL.
Gone are the days of promoting democracy or saying that Assad has to go. He did not repeat that.
And Rebecca Cruz provides an update on anti-Islam protests in Leipzig, Germany.
A lot of it comes from not just the situation in France, but the number of refugees that are coming into Germany specifically.
Then Joshua and I talk with University of Oklahoma sociologist Loretta Bass about first and second generation immigrant populations in France.
They want to be a part of the social fabric. So they're going to go for an option, some pathway to reach that.
We'll revisit issues of race and identity in France, but the news is coming up next. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlot. Joshua Landis, Rebecca Cruz. It was State of the Union week. President Obama spent very little time, really, on foreign policy, foreign affairs. But one thing for you, Joshua, he mentioned how we're supporting moderate opposition in Syria, and he's asking Congress to authorize the use of force against ISIL.
Instead of getting dragged into another ground war in the Middle East, we are leading a broad coalition, including Arab nations, to degrade and ultimately destroy this terrorist group. We're also supporting a moderate opposition in Syria that can help us in this effort and assisting people everywhere who stand up to the bankrupt ideology of violent extremism.
Tell us more about the implications of that.
Well, his Middle East section was really about counterterrorism. Gone are the days of promoting democracy or saying that Assad has to go. He did not repeat that. He has reduced America's interests. And he spent as much time talking about what he was going to do, talking about what he shouldn't do, which is what Bush did, which is to get Americans involved in fighting. He said we're taking Americans out of the valleys of Afghanistan, and it's a mistake to get too deeply involved. And that, of course, is the heart of the debate in Washington.
But that's the opposite of what he's arguing, right? He wants to use force against ISIL.
He wants to use force.
So he's asking for that.
He wants to have a coalition, and he says it's counterterrorism, and he's not going to occupy countries. We're not going to get our military involved. Now, of course, he sent 3,000 men to Iraq. So he's trying to limit our position in the Middle East, and that's where we see Bibi Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, is being invited to Congress.
To Congress without notifying the president.
They're going to use him against him because they think he's too weak on Iran. He's looking for an arms deal, and they say, no, we want more sanctions. The president said, do not sanction. I'll veto sanctions because you'll screw it up. And here is loggerheads. They don't want – and they don't believe that we can have a bargain with Iran, that we have to nail them with more and more sanctions, and that Iran is in many ways – that we need regime change in Iran, not cottoning up to a regime or making a deal with a regime.
Well, the comments about counterterrorism, anti-terrorism, Islamic extremism relates to something else that we experienced this week. There was a rather large rally in Leipzig, Germany, an anti-Islamic rally. It seemed to be an anti-immigration rally. Rebecca, you've even spent time in Leipzig. Tell us about what's going on there. I mean, clearly coming on the heels of the shootings in Paris and all of the concern now about extremism in Europe.
Yes, surely fueled by the situation in Paris, but this has actually been going on for some time. And in fact, there's an organization that was developed out of Dresden, which is nearby to Leipzig, that is a kind of Germany for Germans organization, anti-immigration, as you mentioned. And little pocket organizations or partner organizations then have sprouted throughout Germany and, in fact, throughout much of Europe. The organization in Dresden wanted to hold this rally, but there was a supposed terrorist threat against the organization, so they then moved it to Leipzig. Not as many people showed up as they were expecting. Leipzig, of course, is historically important. This was where the demonstrations were that brought down communism in Germany. But there were tens of thousands of people. The police were out in mass force. And what was interesting, though, is then you also had tens of thousands of people counter-protesting this. So it was, both sides were represented there. But this is an interesting phenomenon that we're seeing. And a lot of it comes from not just the situation in France, but the number of refugees that are coming into Germany specifically. We have the refugees that we've talked about from Syria, from other areas, many of those that are coming over the Mediterranean Sea. Many of those have been welcomed into Germany, but the welcomed perhaps is not the right word, as they're often put up in subpar housing. They are not a usual feature of East German life, as you didn't see a lot of immigrants into that part of Germany until in the last 15 or so years.
Well, are these the kind of protests we're going to be seeing now around the rest of Europe? I mean, we obviously there have been protests or rallies in France mm-hmm. in support of freedom of speech and anti-extremism, but are we really going to see more and more anti-immigration activities going on in Europe, which has always been, as you said, kind of rather welcoming mm-hmm. on the one hand, not necessarily an equal welcome, but rather welcoming.
Yes, we saw some also this week in Denmark that were related to this in Germany. So, yes, we are probably going to see those. But again, we are seeing the counter movements, too. So I think we're going to see both sides of this situation, both sides of the rally.
All right. Well, thank the both of you, as always, for being here on World Peace.
Thank you.
We'd love to hear your thoughts about this discussion. All of our shows are archived on the Worldviews page of KGOU.org. We're on Twitter as well, at WorldviewsKGOU. And you can contact each of us individually, at Suzette Gorlatt, at Joshua_Landis, and at Cruz226. After a short break, Joshua and I continue talking about some of these anti-immigrant sentiments in Europe with University of Oklahoma sociologist Loretta Bass. I'm Suzette Gorlatt, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlatt. A story from NPR's Dina Temple-Raston on Thursday's episode of Morning Edition traced the radicalization of the two Charlie Hebdo gunmen. A decade and a half ago, the two brothers moved to a Paris neighborhood made up of immigrants from Central and Northern Africa. University of Oklahoma sociologist Loretta Bass focuses on social stratification issues, and her 2014 book, African Immigrant Families in Another France, examines the integration experience of African migrants to Europe. Loretta Bass, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here with Joshua and me today to talk about your book titled Another France, a book about African immigrant families in France. Can you just start by telling us what drew you to this topic and what do you mean by another France?
Okay, well, I'll take the first part first, and that's that I came to this project sort of organically and serendipitously because I was doing research for over 10 years on child labor in West Africa with a French-speaking population. And I was interested in how child labor is connected to a household economic strategy. And what I found over the course of time is that more and more families had a migrant in Europe who was sending remittances back to Africa. So it was a research clue. And so then I pursued that clue to France. So that's how I became interested in this topic. And then...
And you followed it to France because that's where they were. These families that you were working mm-hmm. with in Senegal were migrating to their colonial home, I guess. Is that kind of how you followed that clue to France?
Right. Yeah. So they were... they have this thick relationship of the French language, and so that's a natural place for step migration to take place. So one person from a family will make that trip to France and then send money back to help support that family unit in Africa. So that's kind of how it came about. And then I, thinking about that, I was like, well, gee, how do I start doing research in France to follow this next piece of the story? And so I submitted a proposal to the Howard Foundation, asking them for enough money to go to France for a year with my family, husband and two kids. And I submitted it. And then like a month later, there were riots just north of Paris in an immigrant suburb. And it just went gangbusters, this riot did, because it lasted 3 weeks and it spread to 300 towns in France. And it even spread to other immigrant towns in other European countries. And so then I got a nice email one day that said, we're going to fund you to go to France for a year and take your family.
And obviously those riots were reflective of this concept of another France.
Definitely another France. Yeah. And I actually have an interview with a woman that really inspired the title of my book. This woman is coming from the Ivory Coast or Côte d'Ivoire, and she has one child, and she moved to France about 5 years ago. And when in the Ivory Coast, they had a civil war that broke out. And so she was part of a political migration. She says, as an African, you have to insist and demand your rights. I use the same roads, the same stores, but I live in another France. We are different physically, and they know my race by my name and skin. Someone in my Bible study who has a 13-month-old got her baby a place in the public subsidized daycare center. She's French and white. I put my daughter on the list when I was 5 months pregnant, and now she is 18 months old. I still do not have a place. Why is this woman in front of me? When I ask if there's a space for my daughter, the authorities say, Madame, the places are taken. So this is exemplary of this other France that sub-Saharan Africans are facing today.
Well, what percentage are sub-Saharan Africans rather than North Africans? We all know about North Africans, but what's the what are the percentages?
Well, it's hard to get hard numbers, but I have seen an estimate that 1 in 7 children in France has either a migrant mother, a father, or both. Okay, so that gives you an idea of sort of the prevalence of immigrants in general. And these immigrants are coming from Eastern Europe as well. About 8% of immigrants are coming from Turkey. But when you just look at that sub-Saharan African piece, it's 3% of the total population today is counted as being of sub-Saharan African descent. That's about 1.8 million people.
Wow. So that's quite substantial.
It is. Mm-hmm.
Our guest is Loretta Bass, a sociologist at the University of Oklahoma who studies African immigrant communities in France and other parts of Europe. More after a break. I'm Suzette Gorelot, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorelot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. We're talking with Loretta Bass, an OU sociologist and the author of the book African Immigrant Families and Another France. Just before the break, she described the challenges and inequality faced by immigrants in Paris. Joining us in this conversation is Joshua Landis.
How is their experience different from people from Eastern Europe or the North Africans who are not, you know, who are tan or brown instead of being black? Is blackness a special category in France, or is it resemble the other communities?
It's a special category, definitely. You know, over and over again in my interviews, people would talk about the puissance de la peau, and that's just in French, the power of skin. And they would say that, you know, I had from young people, I would hear, I'm French on the inside, African on the out. So they identified with these core values that are French of liberty, equality, and brotherhood, fraternity. On the outside, they're affronted on a daily basis with this otherness that they experience. There are children and young people that I interviewed that are French citizens by birth, and they grew up in France, and they have internalized this otherness, and so much so because they continue to ask them, like, where are you from? No, really, where are you from? And so then they say, I'm from Africa. I had one woman tell me that, you know, my kids have not even been to Africa, but you ask them where they're from and they'll tell you they're from Guinea.
So because it's apparent on the outside that they're not from France, even though they might be born there. I think that's what's really interesting about your work, Loretta, is that you actually give voice to the people that are facing these experiences, these first and second generation immigrants or immigrated, but then maybe even born in France, as you were just mentioning, and the kind of inequality that they're facing. But I think that the question of identity is one that's really important. You just the way you put it, this power of skin, and that they're French on the inside but African on the outside. I can't imagine how that must feel, to feel that you don't really belong in your own home, but yet you don't belong in the place where, you know, your ancestors came from either, and the identity crisis in some ways that may lead to. I mean, did you find that? It sounds like the quote you even read leads us to believe that they just don't know what to do about this as individuals, as human beings. It's that's troubling, right?
Yeah. So in their secular education in public France, they're taught that they have full rights. But outside of the books, in practice, that's really not what they feel. Socially, they're isolated. They live in suburbs, for the most part, these working class suburbs that were constructed after World War II. And they had vibrant factories. And with deindustrialization after 1970, a lot of these factories shut. So then you have sort of you have working class native French people, some who were still there, but you have significant immigrant populations that are also there. And it's economically despondent. It's a very deprived area. When you look at these suburbs compared, so when I think about these suburbs, you look at the employment rate in France today, it's 11%. You go to an immigrant suburb, and for young men between the ages of 20 and 35 years of age, you're looking at an unemployment rate of 25 to 40%. So they're economically excluded. And when I think, you know, in just the last week, with ISIS, and I don't know if you guys have been following these figures coming out of the European community, that you have a lot of fighters who are actually European citizens. And so when I think about those figures of 700 to 900 estimated coming from France, or 500 from Britain, or another 400 from Germany, I think about these immigrant communities, which are North African and Sub-Saharan African. And predominantly, when we think about the ISIS angle, you're really talking about mostly North African. But what happens when we think about this issue and the spread of terrorism in Sub-Saharan Africa? Will these young men who don't have jobs and who are socially excluded, what are they to do? I mean, they want respect. They want to be a part of the social fabric. So they're going to go for an option, some pathway to reach that.
In America, we see the same effects. Ghettos, black Americans have had a very difficult time. The unemployment rate amongst black youth is terribly high. Imprisonment rate, disaffection from society, different culture occurring, language differences. And yet black Americans have been in this country longer than almost any of the white Americans. How different is the French experience from the American experience? Is it really the same, or is it substantially different because France is different?
France is different. That's the bottom line, that they're not going to monitor integration of ethnicities and race through the French government. Whereas in the U.S., after the Civil Rights Act of the 1960s, you know, we developed the current population survey to actually monitor the Voting Rights Act. You know, so we have in our country, along with the legislation, we monitor racial integration. And maybe it's not always the best of news, but it gives us something to work for. In France right now, there is no mechanism in place to monitor social integration in an effective manner. The way people are counted, even if you were to get a number, it's a complete underestimate because you lose people in the second generation. People are assumed to be French, and if you're French, you're assumed not to have a color of your skin.
So is this what you're referring to in your book about the ostrich policy, that basically they don't have a policy to monitor these things, that there's,
exactly.
They're basically just sticking their heads in the sand? But I wonder how much of this can really be even dealt with in terms of policy and monitoring. I mean, even, you know, Joshua's comments here indicate that even when you have a system of law and oversight to deal with these things, social integration, that this has more to do with culture and the way people are treated in general. And how can you even legislate that or oversee that in terms of government action and government policy?
Well, I would say that when I think back to what I've read about the 1960s, because I was born in the late 60s, but that we are much more integrated. And we actually have a black middle class in this country. And it's a substantial black middle class. We've elected twice an African-American male to the highest position in our country as our leader. Those are pretty significant shifts in a society in just 50 years, I would say. So I would say that affirmative action policies passed in the 1960s have been extremely effective. Sure, there are people who have not made it on that bus, so to speak.
But America is an immigrant society from a long time ago. We've been doing this for a long time. We're good at it. We came two by twos instead of having a sort of national identity as somebody and then have foreigners come in.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong about this, but big immigration in France is a post-Second World War thing, a post-colonialism thing. For the United States, it's been going on, you know, since the beginning of this country. Perhaps the interracial big immigration has started in the last 100 years. But in France, it's much newer. And to what extent are the problems just sort of, you know, teething problems of having to deal with this as a new immigrant receiving country?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Joshua, in terms of this question, that they are relatively new at dealing with social integration. But when comparing to the U.S., I mean, the French really celebrate their own immigrant history. Most of that is a European immigrant history of people who do look like them and act like them after, you know, two generations, whereas we don't have that with the sub-Saharan African migrants and even with North African migrants. You know, there are still characteristics that are called out. And in my book, I had also interviewed among young people North Africans as well as sub-Saharan Africans to kind of tease out that, you know, for sub-Saharan Africans, you just can't separate immigrant status from a racial status. They are intertwined and inseparable. But to the French credit, they're a country that has a national museum for the history of immigrants. And you can go there in Paris and you can learn all about their immigrant history. So I think they're ready to celebrate their history. I think the next step is to welcome the immigrants that are there and perhaps cheer them on.
Well, Loretta, thank you so much for being with us today to share your perspective on this very important and eye-opening issue in France and elsewhere. So thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to our conversation with Loretta Bass, a sociologist at the University of Oklahoma who focuses on African migrant communities in Europe. Her book, African Immigrant Families in Another France, came out last year, and there's more information on our website, kgou.org. KGOU produces Worldviews as part of a collaborative partnership with OU's College of International Studies. Symphony Swift serves as our research fellow, Sam Dupre helps prepare our web content, and our producer is Brian Hardzinski. For Rebecca Cruz and Joshua Landis, I'm Suzette Berlot.